Welcome back into Bullseye on the afternoon on AM 930 WEOL. Getting ready for a red-hot weekend, both in baseball and in hoops. Now that the World Baseball Classic has come and gone, we are just about set to put the table together for an Elite Eight going into this weekend after that final set of Sweet 16 games are played a little bit later on this evening. Here to break all of that down and then some, one of our buddies, Ryan Fowler of Fox Sports and WhatIfSports.com. Mr. Fowler, always a pleasure to have you on, and we will start on the hardwood. As we did a week ago when we had you on, you mentioned that one of your other jobs, working at WhatIfSports.com, you guys run that simulator. We promised we would have you on again to talk about the next set of simulations after the first two rounds were complete. If we may, what did the simulator tell you going into this round of 16?
What he's talking about today is Xavier's upset of Arizona as they get the better of their former coach, Sean Miller. And, you know, when you look at these simulations, I think people nowadays, they like finality. They want a winner, they want a loser, and they don't want any gray area. But when you're in the simulation world, when you're in the projection world, as we learned with this last election, there are areas of gray. And when you looked at the simulation between Arizona and Xavier, Arizona won 60% of the time. And, okay, that's over 50%. Let's give it to Arizona and advance them in the bracket. But that's not to say that Xavier had a 40% chance of winning that matchup last night. And anybody who stayed up late to watch it, probably sleeping right now, first of all, or at the end of a very long day, Xavier had a chance. And the stats were telling the story. For those who didn't hear the segment last week, the simulation works like this. The stats tell the story. We're simulating, via an algorithm, the stats and the statistical makeup of both teams. So there's really no bias going into these predictions like you hear on the pregame shows. Those are based on the eye test, and that's based on so-called experts' opinion of said teams. I know Seth Davis picked them to win yesterday. But when this comes down to it, the simulation wasn't all in on Arizona. So I thought that was a pretty cool tip of the cap for that. And then Kansas rolled pretty easy. Oregon in the thriller against Michigan. And when you look at the simulation results between Oregon and Michigan, it was 53-47. So that was as snug as we learned it to be. And now we pay attention to tonight's game.
Well, and taking a look at tonight's games, boy, still a pretty healthy slate. I mean, I think that's the best part about this round. Everybody's looking for the buzzer beater. Everybody's looking for Cinderella. But when you look at tonight's games, top-seeded North Carolina against fourth-seeded Butler, seventh-seeded South Carolina taking on third-seeded Baylor. A lot of folks high on South Carolina after taking care of business against Duke last week. And then you've got, I'm going to skip one game here and head to the last game, Florida against Wisconsin. There's some intrigue there because of how hot Wisconsin has been. But the matchup I skipped, I'm going to bring up right now because I think that could be the matchup of the Sweet 16. Third-seeded UCLA against second-seeded Kentucky. Boy, that should be a lot of fun for us to watch at 9:40 tonight. This really kind of seems like a toss-up right now. You mentioned last week that when you guys did your first round of simulations, UCLA came out of that bracket.
They did, and they still do. When you look at the way that the bracket falls out through the simulation engine's eyes, I mean, UCLA, tempo, tempo, tempo. Anybody that saw that Cincinnati-UCLA game last weekend, you learned about Lonzo Ball, and maybe you've heard his dad, his voice kind of carries these days through headlines
once or twice,
through the atmosphere. But yeah, UCLA in the 1001 simulations won 71% of the time. I think that's a tad high. I think it's obviously going to be closer. These two teams faced each other during the regular season with UCLA winning at Rupp. It was kind of like the coming out party for UCLA this year and Lonzo Ball kind of making a name for himself. But it's not just Lonzo Ball. And he's drawing comparisons to Jason Kidd. I think it's kind of that Pac-12, what used to be the Pac-10 correlation there. But Kentucky, they're young, and they sometimes win ugly. They did that against Wichita State, as Wichita State had a chance to win that game last weekend. But, yeah, UCLA comes out on top 71% of the time. If I was picking it, I'd probably hedge down a little bit and say like two-thirds of the time UCLA wins. It comes down to Kentucky's freshmen playing like sophomores and juniors, which Coach Cal's teams have done in the past.
Ryan, when the simulations run, how much of that, you bring up the fact that Kentucky's young, how much of that weighs into it? Is there any of it, or is it just straight stats?
Straight stats.
Right.
That's the beauty of it, because, again, I think, I think when people started to see the movie Moneyball mm-hmm. and the books on advanced metrics really start to become a little bit more of a common theme in sports discussions, people are starting to become smarter about it. And I think when I started at What If Sports in 2010, and it really took a few months to really start learning, because there is a high degree of learning of how the simulation works and how the algorithms work. But when you look at that and you think, okay, we're taking the bias out because we have enough bias in most places right now in sports. And you are there holes? Yeah, there's holes in anything. I go back to how models and polling went wrong in the election. When you look at how this works in the sports world, I think it's kind of a breath of fresh air that we're trying something different because everything else is almost kind of an echo chamber. When you go against the grain, it's a hot take. It's like the one thing that drives me crazy about hot takes is it's against the grain. It's a different way of, and then somebody tries to dilute that different way of thinking by calling it a hot take and almost putting like a stereotype or a prejudice against that hot take. This is completely aside from all of that, and it's literally allowing the stats to speak for themselves. And I think Andy mentioned it earlier. Wisconsin coming in hot into this game tonight against Florida. The simulation takes the regular season stats into account, not the postseason stats. So there is a cutoff date because you need the largest sample size possible, and there is that cutoff date. Now, I will say this. If there were to be an injury during this postseason, we would remove that player from the simulation, and their stats would not account for any of the future simulations. We've actually had to do that in the past.
Ryan Fowler of Fox Sports and WhatIfSports.com joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Let's transition now into some fantasy baseball, because you had alluded to this a little bit earlier, talking about how the numbers have been taken into account for your simulations. We really haven't been able to dive much into this in the times that we've had you on the show. But sabermetrics really kind of has taken over statistically for baseball. I mean, your average statistics for baseball that, you know, we used when we were kids growing up 15 years mm-hmm. ago, they just don't really kind of have the same panache that some of the sabermetrics do. When you're doing your fantasy baseball research, and it seems like a lot of this terminology has changed over the years, are there a couple that you go to right away? I mean, when you're taking a look and trying to project at what a guy's net worth might be from a fantasy perspective, offensively, are there a couple that you go to right away?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm glad you let me the chance to kind of spell this out. I'll start with something that's a little basic, but it makes a ton of sense. Plus, not only are sabermetrics becoming more commonplace in among front offices of baseball, I know Cleveland does it, we know Oakland does it, and some of these ones that have been pushing it away, like the Philadelphia Phillies, they're starting to embrace it. The Red Sox were obviously with Bill James there. If you've ever heard Bill James' name pop up, he was one of the architects of all this. But one area that in fantasy baseball that you can go to really quick, and there's a website called Fangraphs.com. They have it laid out in probably the cleanest detail, is line drive percentage. So, again, it kind of goes back to that gray area of contact. But I think when people listen to the bat and they see the line of where the ball's going, they know what a line drive is. So that goes into the line drive column of said player. So when you look at a line drive rate of a baseball player, you want the league average is around 20%. If you go too high or too low, you're either above ski and you're lucky, you're quote unquote lucky. If you're down in the 15% range, you're quote unquote unlucky. And then this also falls into line with whatever that player's career rate is at line drive percentage. Another one that I use is batting average balls in play. And I can give you a real world explanation for this because it makes the most sense of one of the biggest stars. Bryce Harper last year hit .243 batting average. His batting average balls in play, which takes out things like walks and pop flies and things like that, and when he hits the ball in between the chalk, what was his batting average? It was .263. Batting average balls in play was .263. His career batting average balls in play was .314. So nearly 40 points below what he had done for his career. That shows not only were pitchers pitching around him, because, again, he led the league in walks last year, but when he was swinging outside of his zone. So when he was hitting it into play, yeah, maybe he hit a home run. But because his average was so bad, he was really reaching and probably trying to reach outside of his zone because he was so frustrated being pitched around like Barry Bonds was 15 years ago. So those are a couple to keep in mind. There's other things called XFIP and WOBA, where the formulas will make your head explode. Yeah. But when you look at them in a practical manner and you apply it to fantasy analysis, I really think those are the ones that really help you make the best choices when you're doing your draft, when you're doing your fantasy waiver wire. If you go to the Fox Fantasy YouTube channel, we've actually started to do a tutorial, and we have explainers on BatFIP, on XFIP, and we're working on some other ones throughout the next few weeks as a little bit of a tutorial, a little bit of a 101. So you can check that out at the Fox Fantasy YouTube channel.
You mentioned you've got the tutorial on there. From what you've seen, how long does it usually take people to sort of catch on to all this, Ryan?
There's a learning curve. There's no question about it, because Andy mentioned it, and I'm sure you're the same way. When we grew up and we flipped over the back of a baseball card,
yeah. It
was average, it was home runs, it was RBI, it was stolen bases, and those all matter when you're playing in roto fantasy baseball leagues. Those are the stats that you want. There's a thing now where, okay, we remember Randy Johnson struck out a bunch of hitters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now it's not so much the raw strikeouts, it's how many strikeouts they're striking out per nine innings pitched. Because in fantasy baseball, the longer you go into a game, sometimes those strikeouts, there's an ebb and flow to that. So you look back at last year, there's a guy out in Arizona, Robbie Ray, who led the league in strikeout rate. He struck out 12 batters per nine innings pitched. But nobody knows of him because, A, he's in Arizona. His ERA was 4.43. His WHIP was 1.30. The stats we know were so ugly. But from a fantasy perspective, when you know that this guy, as ugly as the other peripherals are, is striking out 12 batters per nine innings, there's some allure there in fantasy baseball. And I've seen that in drafts that I've taken part in over the last few weeks.
Well, in drafts, seems like a lot of them are going to be taking place over the course of the next week or so. And, well, I would hope for your league's sake that you have your draft done by the next week to 10 days here, because opening day, believe it or not, is a week from this coming Sunday. Fowler, always a pleasure to have you on the show, my man. We appreciate it. Next week, we'll have you on again. I'm assuming What If Sports will do another round of simulations after you know who the final four will be, correct?
You know it.
All right, well, we will definitely have you on again next week to break that down. And if you have any fantasy baseball questions, some very late draft questions, we'll certainly address those next week as well. Always a pleasure, my friend, and we will have you on again next Friday.
Take care, guys.
All righty, that's Ryan Fowler of Fox Sports and What If Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at Fox Sports Fowler. Time for a break. When we come back, we're going to have Matt Douglas with an update on the healthcare situation that kind of broke within the last hour or so. We'll shed some light on that and much more as Bullseye on the Afternoon continues.